It's 7 hours and 38 minutes to kick off, and although the Vikings have lost five NFC championship games in a row, this squad and this coaching staff, with the exception of Brian Robinson, who was in the 2008 game, haven't been responsible for any of them.
Now, with a look back at the past week's games and top sports news.
Wiggins, what a spin moment! It better finish!
Hoyle centers! They score!
Plus a preview of what's ahead.
Bauer with a great stop. Hughes to the bang!
Here's Scott Korsanowski.
Bridgewater throws, touchdown!
With Sunday's Sports Talk.
Steps into it, passes, caught, Diggs, sideline, touchdown, unbelievable, Vikings win it.
Ah, yes, you know, there's been a lot of talk this week about where does that play rank in Minnesota sports history, and I personally put it number one. I mean, I put it ahead of the Kirby, you know, to me, you get down to the Twins moments, you know, from their two World Championships, and Kirby, you know, the home run that he hit in game six. Mm-hmm. But the game was tied. Okay, it was huge. And, yeah. And, you know, to me, when you're breaking down where these plays rank, you have to go to significance. And certainly from a significant standpoint, when Kirby hits a home run to win game six and send that in, you know, essentially sending his team to the Super Bowl, right? Send him to a winner-take-all game. That's what that Kirby homer did. They're already in the World Series, but they were down 3-2, and he hit the home. They were down in the series. So I could go with that one. But to me, to go from what was basically a sure loss to a sure win.
In 10 seconds,
where it wasn't a tie game. It was you went from losing to winning on a team that was going to be favored in its next game. And if it wins its next game, which is now 7 hours and 36 minutes away, if it wins its next game, it's going to be playing in its home stadium in the championship. That's significant, too. And, you know, it's just like a lot of people compared it to the U.S. win over the Soviets back in 1980, because when the U.S. won that game, they still had work to do. You know, right. They still had to go and beat Finland.
Mm-hmm.
It was Finland or Sweden. I forget. I think it was Finland.
It was one of them, yeah.
Yeah, the Norwegians, that country with where, who was it? Who was the Trump person who's the, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Who said she wasn't sure if those were white countries? Because they're so white, you're blinded when you go up there. Anyway, so yeah, that was a great moment. But for today's show, as I said, I said it, and I really got an epiphany with this team almost when it came to me was after the loss, after the Panthers game. And I tweeted, redemption tour, Vikings are finishing, they're going to finish the season 6-0, and they're going to beat the Eagles, or not the Eagles, I said they're going to beat the Saints, and they're going to beat the Falcons, and they're going to beat the Patriots. Well, they didn't get the Falcons, but they have their own kind of little bit of kryptonite here from the Eagles, in that the Eagles have beaten the Vikings three straight. The only three times they've met in the postseason has been against the Eagles. None of those losses were overly painful. And they were, I think one of them was here when T-Jack threw an interception and the Eagles won. The other two were in Philadelphia. And the other two times, the two times the Vikings were in Philadelphia, 1980, and I think it was 2003, the Eagles went on to go to the Super Bowl. So, you know, when the Vikings go to Philadelphia and Philadelphia beats the Vikings, they go, well, this year Philadelphia beats the Vikings, they're going to go to the Super Bowl. And look, as a Vikings fan, when I sit down at 5:40 tonight and start watching that game, I mean, I will be nervous.
Yep,
I can't help it. They were up 17-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
And my wife said, what do you think? And I said, well, that was a really good first half. I mean, that was, you know, other than the missed field goal, you had no complaints. It was a 49-yarder, okay, outdoors. But I was in the kitchen, like, fixing a sandwich or something, and I said, there will be pain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't expect the level of pain that there was, where they fell behind twice in the last 3 minutes of the game, including with 25 seconds to go. But I did say there will be pain.
I don't think I was ever comfortable in that game, even though they were up 17-0.
My buddy, the Patriots fan, who I really want the Vikings to play the Patriots, because me and my buddy are not like Philadelphia Eagles fans. I mean, I actually would love
you're
to watch.
You're rational?
I would love to watch the game with him. I mean, he lives in Florida. I am somewhat pondering getting the heck out of here and going down there to watch the game with him if the Vikings make the Super Bowl with the Patriots. But he, when they're up 17-0, he texted me and he says, are you relaxed? And I said, not period, at period, all period.
Yep.
Okay. And one of the young lawyers at our firm texts midway through the second quarter or the third quarter, at the game, loving watching the Vikings kick the number one offense's ass. And I said, young Andrew, I said, please relax. I said, this is a long way from being over. And so I understand the history of it. But I'm telling you what, and kind of my message this morning to Vikings fans, now that we're 7 hours and 43 minutes away from kickoff, and I'm going to try to do it, is this team is different. 33? Yeah, 33. This team is, was I been saying 43? Yeah, seven. Yeah. I can't do the math. is 33 minutes. I don't want someone to be late for the kickoff. is this team could lose today. Sure, it could. It could have lost last week. It looked dismal, right? They did lose three games this year. The Zimmer's prior team, you know, had a kicker that missed a kick prior playoff game, lost. These games are close. The Eagles and Vikings are close. All I'm saying is this team seems to me to have its focus in the right place. It has had its focus. And a lot of times I don't like when coaches do this, but remember Zimmer's opening press conference. He says, I envision the day when I'm sitting at the end of a Super Bowl and purple and gold confetti has fallen down and I'm handing a Super Bowl trophy to Mark, to the Wilfs. Yeah. And in other words, that doesn't mean they're going to do it this year. That doesn't mean they're ever going to do it. It just means that Zimmer's whole premise and this team's whole premise has been to go to the Super Bowl and has been to win the Super Bowl. I mean, that's why I think this team can handle that emotional jolt they got from that fantastic play in the appropriate manner. And why I don't expect them to lay an egg today. It doesn't mean that the Eagles couldn't beat them, but I'm sorry, you know, and I'm going to be very nervous and I'm going to be a wreck, but this is not, I know we all, you know, and I wrote a piece on 1500 talking about how it reminded me of my dad and the history.
That was really good.
And my relationship with the Vikings is personal to me. And it's irrelevant of who the players are. You remember the players, but I have a relationship with this team, and a lot of fans have a relationship with this team. Like every team does, every fan that becomes a fan of the team. I read somewhere where somebody said, I didn't pick the Vikings, the Vikings picked me. There was a story I read in the paper where somebody said the Vikings, and the Vikings picked me. I was born, my dad was a Vikings fan, I grew up watching them, and they picked me. And I'm going to root for this team, whether they're good or whether they're terrible. That's what I do. And it wouldn't feel right for me to, after, if a team got, the Timberwolves have been miserable forever, I could say, well, I'm going to root for the Bucks or something. I root for them. I like them. And I'm going to root for them even when they're terrible. And so we have a personal relationship, and we are impacted by this stuff that happened. And I'm sure there's some impact on the players that hear it, right? I mean, I'm sure like Everson Griffin and Case Keenum, he's an aware guy. The Vikings have a bunch of likable players that are aware guys, right? They're aware of things. They're aware of what's going on, just like the Cubs players were aware of what was going on. But if you remember those Cubs players, and they went through some significant pain. I know you've heard Mackey talk about it this week. They were down 3-1 in the World Series. They were up 4 runs in the World Series Game 7 and gave up the lead with the best bullpen in baseball, right? I mean, they went through some pain, and they won. But the players embraced that they wanted to be the ones to deliver these fans from their little version of sporting hell. But they weren't the ones responsible for it. The Cubs were a bunch of young guys. They had nothing to do with the Cubs' history, and that's how they treated it. And that's the sense I get from this Vikings team, that they understand the fans, and they want to deliver a championship for the fans and for themselves. That's their whole objective as a professional. But they're not bogged down by it. I don't get the sense that they are, because they shouldn't be. They aren't responsible for it. You know, the only guy on this team that was on the 2008 Vikings or 2009 Vikings was Brian Robinson. You know, and he didn't do anything in that game that cost him the game. He played in the Saints game, but he's the only guy who did it. Okay, it's not like, you know, it's not like Gary Anderson's on this team who actually missed the kick. You could point to one guy. There's nobody on this team that really had anything to do with that loss other than Brian Robinson, who played as a rookie. So that's all I'm saying is it's time to relax. Now, as we go through the Vikings said this is going to be their 10th NFC championship game. So after giving a speech about how really history doesn't have anything to do with it, I'm going into the history, okay? Because to me, I think it's interesting. And the Vikings, when I was a kid, they won their first 4 NFC championship games.
Yeah.
And actually, the first one was technically the NFL championship when they played the Browns in 1969. And I have tweeted that I've seen every single Vikings playoff game. I was wrong. I've missed 2 playoff games.
Okay.
And the 2 I missed was, this was the second one. It was the third one. They made the playoffs in 68 and beat the Colts, or lost to the Colts. Then they played in 1969, still my favorite game as a Vikings fan, when they beat the Rams 23-20. And I talked quite a bit about it in the piece I wrote, because that was an experience where my dad and I took the bus over there from a Northeast bar, and the drunk fans, the guy punched a hole in the ceiling of the bus, and my dad looks at me and goes, "You're getting an education." And my dad loved it. My dad had some drink. He would bring some coffee with some brandy in it, but my dad was not a heavy drinker. I don't think I ever saw my dad drunk. But he would have a cocktail or two, but he liked hanging around those. He grew up in Northeast Minneapolis. He didn't like the traffic at the stadium, so we took that. The whole experience was visceral and wonderful and messy and fun and cold and hot. It was as good a sporting experience I've ever had in my life. Well, the next week, the Vikings played the Browns in the NFC Championship game, and they beat the Browns easily 27-7 at home. They killed the Browns. And the Browns were then in the NFC because this was pre-merger. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see that game because they had the blackout rule.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we didn't have tickets to that game. And I had to listen to it on the radio. Mm-hmm. I listened to it, but I did not see it. Not because I wouldn't have watched it.
So you still haven't missed it.
No, the only other game that I completely missed was the Hail Mary game because we were skiing out in Colorado. Okay. Our family was skiing. I went up the lift, and it said, and they had like a little chalkboard, mm-hmm, the top of the lift. It said Vikings 14, Cowboys 7, 2 minutes to go. And yeah, I ski down the hill thinking, great. I come up the next time. It's like, 45 minutes later, because when you're out in Colorado, it takes you like 30 minutes to get down and you wait in line for 20 minutes. Yep. It was probably close to an hour later. I go up final 17-14.
Oh,
yeah, that was brutal. Brutal. Didn't even really know what happened. There wasn't ESPN then. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we found out. There wasn't internet. We probably called somebody or something, or maybe watched the news. It was on there. So that was the second. That was that season, the Browns game. In 1973, the Vikings went into Texas Stadium and beat John Gilliam and the Cowboys 27-10. John Gilliam was kind of like Randy Moss before Randy Moss. I'm not saying he was Randy Moss, but he was this guy the Vikings got from the Cardinals, and he could catch deep passes. And I remember that game as the Vikings just throwing the ball all over the Cowboys. Well, I went back and looked at the stats. Fran Tarkenton threw for 133 yards in that game. John Gilliam had two catches, but he had one for 54 yards and a touchdown. The Vikings D forced six Cowboys turnovers and beat him. I do remember watching that game. The next year, the Vikings beat the Rams 14-10 at home. The Vikings back in those days had trouble moving the ball against, but the Rams would always screw up. The Rams quarterback that day was a guy named James Harris. I didn't even remember that. So they beat them. The Vikings forced five turnovers. Then in 1975, they had the Hail Mary game, which you talked about. And then in 1976, they beat the Rams 23-14 at home. And this was talked about. Ben Gessling, young Ben, who's been on this show, who's a wonderful writer,
yep,
great reporter. And Ben wasn't at that game. Obviously, he wasn't born yet. I was at that game. And Ben said, the Vikings are up 17-0, and there was no stress in that game. Oh, Ben. There was unbelievable amount of stress in that game. It was just early. And this you wouldn't get this unless you took a deep dive. The Rams got the opening kickoff and went on this massive drive down the field. Pat Hayden, who's now the AD, or was the AD of Southern Cal, was their quarterback for the Rams. And they had the ball forever. And they just grinded it down, and they had first and goal at the one. And the Rams ran four straight plays, and the Vikings stuffed all four and got a goal line stand. So now you're like we're halfway through the first quarter.
Yep.
Vikings run three plays and punt. The Rams get the ball at about the 50. Again, they grind down the field. They get it down onto the 1 yard line again. Three straight tries, they can't get it in. So finally, their coach was George Allen. Finally, on fourth down, after seven shots, I don't know that all of them are from the one, but they were all within the two or three.
Okay.
Seven shots to get in the goal line. George Allen finally says, screw it. I'm kicking the field goal. We better get some points. Bobby, they block the punt. They block the field goal, and Bobby Bryant returns at 90 yards for a touchdown. So the fantastic Vikings had been outgained like 120-3.
Yep.
They'd had the ball for 14 minutes to 30 seconds, and they're down 7-0. From that point on, there was not a lot of stress.
Yeah.
I will agree with them, but that beginning, I'll never forget. So we covered the four Vikings victories. Now, coming out of each break, I'll give you some insight on each of the Vikings' five playoff losses. But when we come back, a little bit more look into today's game.
My advice is don't win a Vikings game to the game. Don't tempt the gods. Please, don't do it. I have friends who come in from New York all the time, Giants fans, and I'm always like, listen, don't wear your Eli Manning jersey if you come into the link, especially don't stroll around the parking lot. I mean, once you get into the stadium, fine, I get it. You can take off your jacket and wear your jersey, but you can't stroll around the link parking lot with your Terrell Owens jersey and, You remember when T.O. came back here? They tore the jerseys off people and lit them on fire in a big bonfire in the parking lot?
You know, that is amazing to me, and I know that Phil and Judd had a lot of conversation. I did enjoy when they were the one guys that what I call meathead radio. Okay,
yes.
You know that's okay. People like it. People like meathead radio. I you know, my show back when I did the 8 to 10, I called it the sophisticated sports fan, mm-hmm. and that's kind of. I mean, I'm a sports fan, but I've never quite understood why you would hate somebody who is. Roots for the other team.
Right.
I have had a lot of Vikings fans that when I've been at a game that I've gotten annoyed at because they're mm-hmm. obnoxious.
Yeah.
And they're making my ability to watch. And I've probably annoyed a few people around me when I've been in a Vikings game when I get a little, you know, wound up and I'm saying stupid things. In fact, one of my law partner has season tickets and he says there's a guy that sits behind him. You know, he's got season tickets, so he knows the people around him. You get right. to know the people you sit around.
Yep.
And he says this guy behind him, he likes the guy, but the guy's about my age, so he's been through the whole Super Bowl history.
Yep.
Okay? And he says the guy gets very negative. Okay? My father was very much that. We got very negative at games. And he says this other person who sits to his right, this woman had moved here from, like, San Diego. She's had season tickets for, like, 5 years. She's a Vikings fan, but she doesn't have any of the history. And when the guy was getting really negative, she turned around and said to me, I wish you'd quit being so negative. And John pulled her aside and said, you've got to understand
yeah.
that what these fans have been through that have been a fan as long as this guy behind me, you know, you got to relax. You got to let him vent. This is, mm-hmm. he's been through this. So my point is, I can get annoyed by fans, but I don't get annoyed by fans, and I've annoyed people. But I don't get annoyed by fans because they happen to be rooting for the other team.
Yeah.
I respect them. I'm going, that's cool. You like rooting for your team. I have my buddies who throw the great tailgate at Gopher games. They've always, they now call it the Boathouse, Broncos Boathouse, named after Bronco Nagurski and the Boathouse for PJ Fleck. And they always, they love the fans from the other teams to come over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Nebraska fans, they'll show up and they'll give them a drink and they'll let them eat the food and you chat with them and you get to know them. And it's, what's the big deal? I mean, it's not like, you know, as a lawyer, some of my best friends are the lawyers that I'm against all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing their job. I'm doing my job. We're professional. We work together. We both are trying to do best by our clients. That doesn't mean that I have to hate that. Now, there are some lawyers I dislike. I dislike them because they did something that I didn't like to me. They were mean or they were dishonest or they yelled at me or they didn't answer my call. You know, so why you would get all worked up just because somebody else roots for another team is, and in the story I wrote, one of my most vivid memories was when my dad and I went to that 1969 game. My dad bought season tickets in 1970. In 69, he took me to a game earlier in the year when the Vikings were playing the Steelers. And the Steelers were terrible. And Chuck Knoll, and by the way, it was the Rams coach on the game that I mentioned, the last NFC championship game the Vikings won in the 1976 season. It was Chuck Knox
yeah.
was their coach. George Allen had been there in 69, was Chuck Knox. Well, Chuck Knoll came in his first season with the Steelers, and they had just drafted Mean Joe Green. But the Steelers were terrible.
Yeah.
The next year, they drafted Terry Bradshaw, and they were off and running. But they were terrible. So my dad got tickets. We went, and then he took me to the Rams game, and then my dad got season tickets the next year. But when he got the tickets for the Rams, we were sitting kind of down behind home plate at Met Stadium. They were crappy seats for the Vikings, low and kind of in the corner. And this young couple, good-looking couple, probably in their 30s, they're obviously very successful. But the guy is wearing like a raincoat.
Mm-hmm.
Like a really nice, like beige raincoat that everybody owns when you get old and you like have a job where you wear a suit, and you have that raincoat when it's in Minnesota, you'd wear it when it would be like 50 degrees or it's raining, and he had totes, those little rubber things you put over your dress shoes, and
okay.
he had two really nice leather gloves and no hat, and his wife was dressed similarly, and it was like 15 degrees. And my dad looks at him and he says, where are you from? And they said, oh, we're from Los Angeles. And he goes, I could guess it. And he goes, you're going to need some help. And he gave him our blankets and we kept him warm. And they were rooting for the Rams and we were rooting for the Vikings. And what's the problem with that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's mystifying to me that Eagles fans feel that way.
So
about
angry
it.
About just.
Mystifying
yeah.
to me. I mean,
I
one of my favorite experiences, I was at a Vikings game. And they were playing the Bengals. It was a regular season game. And in front of me files in these four Bengals fans. They're wearing like Bengals jerseys and Bengals stuff. And fine with me. I mean, they were like adults. They were, and he's sitting there, and all of a sudden the stadium starts filling up, and it's all filled with purple. And the guy turns around, he goes, "Why are so many people wearing purple in here?" So now I immediately love the guy, right? The guy got the whole bit, right? I said, "Yeah, it's shocking." The guy got the bit. And so the whole game, you know, when his team would score, I'd high five him if he was happy. It didn't have to be. We weren't playing the game.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted my team to win. He wanted his team to win. But at the end of the day.
But you realized you're not the ones on the field.
No,
playing.
You're not the ones today. And, but it is funny how that goes. But I will tell you this. It is. It'll be interesting to see. And there'll be some coverage of that event. And you said this morning already, somebody's got the Stephon Diggs towel around the waist of Rocky.
Beautiful.
And a lot of people, and I've heard some people get into it, and they say, oh, well, the Philadelphia fan. I've traveled a lot in this country. I've been lucky through both my sports writing job and now as a lawyer that I've been in just about, I think of the top 50 populated cities, I've been in like 45 of them. Okay. And I spent a lot of time in a lot of them. I've traveled this. I've done very little international travel, but a huge amount of domestic travel. And I love Philadelphia. I've been there 3-4 times. Mm-hmm. I think Philadelphia is one of my favorite cities. It's got, people just say it's terrible because that's the narrative. You know, it's the narrative. Oh, it's terrible. It's not terrible. It's got a really cool downtown. The sports area is really cool. Its suburbs remind me a lot of the Twin Cities suburbs. You get out and go west a little bit. There's beautiful suburbs with trees, really nice. They've got the King of Prussia Mall, which is basically like the Mall of America. It's very similar to the Twin Cities. So the fact that their fans act like that, I don't understand that really why they do. I don't think it's because Philadelphia is a terrible place to live. I mean, any city's got great places to live and terrible places to live, but they do. I was going to start this look back with the first of the conference championship 5 losses in a row. So I'll just do it because I don't have much to say. We'll get to Tom Lindemann in a minute. In 1977, the Vikings went to Dallas, and this was after they'd lost their 4th Super Bowl and that they'd been to 4 in 9 games or 4 in 8 years. And they lost it then where they had beaten the Rams in that game where they had the blocked kick and were getting dominated the whole first quarter and then went on to win pretty easily. They went to Dallas where they had won at Dallas the year before, and they played the Dallas a ton in the playoffs. And I remember this game because the Vikings were significant underdogs and got drubbed, because you could see in that season, the 1977 season, this run that had started in 68 and had gone through 76, the Vikings defense was becoming aged. It wasn't the same team. They were like 11-3 or 10-4 that year, and this was after a series of going 12-2. They were still good, but that game was not a heartbreak because you just kind of knew it was over, you know, and you know that it was over. The next year, I think they made the playoffs again and won a game, but it was pretty much the beginning of the end for the Vikings, and you kind of knew it in that game. We didn't think that it would last 41 years until they would maybe, and they still, if they lose today, the 41-year drought will continue.
Yeah, they still have to get there.
I don't think it will, but the NFC Championship drought began in 1977 in a game that was not that memorable because it wasn't that close for me as a kid watching it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Tom Lindemann and see where he was when there was the Minneapolis Miracle. I think he's back now, is he? Have we heard from
it
him?
It sounds like
he's
his Twitter account.
Now, last week we all went 2-2, so Jonathan has won the season series. He had 48 wins, but Tom and I are battling for second. He has 42, I have 41. And the Vikings did not cover last week, by the way, because of that extra point. I don't think any of us really cared. Well, we assume that Tom Lindemann is back, at least in the North America, but we're not sure. Tom, good morning. Welcome back to North America, if you in fact are in North America. And did you happen to see the game last week?
Yes, I did. And I actually, it was complicated, but I was able to do it. I was in Kuala Lumpur, and I was in this hostel, essentially this flat, at 8 a.m, and I was watching the game on my phone through a Reddit stream through Twitch, which is a video game sort of site. And the every maybe 5 minutes or so, the NFL would shut the thing down, so I'd have to jump on somebody else's stream. So pretty stressful, but I tell you that the moment, I'll never forget it. The moment, as I'm sure many people across Minnesota and anybody who's been even related to Minnesota will never forget the moment where they were and how it was. I was screaming in this flat in Kuala Lumpur. And let me just tell you, I was the only person who was interested in this. So it was a bit alarming, but what a magical moment. I could not. The thing is, and here's the thing that blows my mind about it, is like many people, after they kicked the field goal, I'm like, you know what? Too much time left. The Saints are going to come down, which they absolutely did. But there was, it felt different in those last 25 seconds, where I actually believed that every play, that there was actually a legitimate shot. And I think in the past I wouldn't have. I think it would have been like, well, that's it. You know, turn it off, go outside. But I actually believed it was going to happen. And then, of course, you know, a play that will live on forever, famously, for Minnesota.
Yeah, it was something. And you know, I had some weird reactions to it. You know, I wrote a piece on it that you can go look on 1500 and see it. But ultimately, one of the feelings I had that shocked me was I felt guilty. I felt like they didn't deserve to win this game. Like this is not right. They got lucky. It was a fluke. And then I thought, what are you doing? How many times has that happened against this team, including against these very same Saints 9 years earlier? So I got over it. And then I thought, I really would have enjoyed the victory. This is what goes through my mind. I thought I really would have enjoyed the victory more if the Vikings had two great opportunities to win the game before that. The first was when they had third and five where they didn't make it. And then they kicked the field goal. And Troy Aikman, I wanted to throw something through my TV. He said, "Why?" He goes, "They're just going to run the ball here and kick the field goal." I'm going, Troy, one, it's a 53-yard field goal, and we have Kai Forbath. Two, you're leaving Drew Brees a minute 20. I knew Zimmer wouldn't try. I knew he was going to try to get the first down, and Keenum rolled out, and nothing was there. And he threw a really ill-advised fat pass to a covered Kyle Rudolph. They got lucky that wasn't picked. But at least they were trying to get, because if they got that first down, they could have run out the clock and tried a field goal to win the game. When they didn't make that, even when Kai Forbath made it, I don't even think I cheered. I just said, okay.
Yeah.
I said, okay, that's good, because they haven't lost. But, you know, there's a lot to go. And then when the Saints were 4th and 10, I was sure Brees was going to lead him down the field. And all of a sudden, he picks on Xavier Rhodes 3 straight times. Bad idea. And all
Same
of a
route.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's 4th and 10, and I'm going, this is their chance. The number one defense, this is Zimmer, this is the perfect way to win this game. And, you know, then they had a mix-up where the tight end who threw that bad pass caught the ball and beat Mackenzie Alexander. And then I thought it was over, but it was interesting. They did have two chances to win. And then I got thinking, well, if they'd won on defense, it would have felt like a more legitimate victory, but then we would have been robbed of the greatest moment in Vikings history, probably, which was
the
that
greatest
pass.
Moment.
Yeah, it is the greatest moment. It is.
The singular greatest moment in Vikings history.
And it will only be topped when they win the Super, if they win the Super Bowl in any year. Because if you win the Super Bowl, that tops any other moment. But single
For
moment
sure.
where you go from losing to winning in 10 seconds in improbable fashion on an important game where you're favored in the next game, and if you win, are going to be home. You know, it's not like the Vikings don't have a chance to win the Super Bowl. They have as much chance as any of these final four teams left, in my opinion. So let's get to the picks. Last week, we all went 2-2. Jonathan's wrapped up the season with 48 wins. He's 48-42. Tom is 42-48. I'm 41-49. So Tom and I are still battling it out for second place, for whatever that's worth. Let's get to the picks. First up, Jaguars at Patriots. The Patriots are favored by 7.5. The line opened at 9.5, went down to 7.5. When Brady had his injury, it briefly went down to 7. So people that kind of figured he was always going to play could have jumped on at 7, but it went back to 7.5. But I don't think this injury, Tom, is a fluke. I mean, I don't think they're faking it. I think something happened. I think he got cut, and it might have an impact at some level. So what's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, first of all, of all the people in the world who wants to hide things, it's Belichick. There's no reason for him to play this ruse. So something definitely has happened. All week I've been thinking about this game, and I've been like, you know what? It's the Patriots, right? Patriots, Jaguars. On the surface, that seems like a very easy decision. A couple factors, though. Number one, it's more than a touchdown. Number two, if you think about matchups, Jacksonville's secondary is an elite secondary in the league. It's the number one pass defense in the league. That's what New England does. They do a lot of dinking and dunking, but pass defense-wise, I think people are being lulled by the fact that Jacksonville gave up a ton of points the last couple weeks, but really their pass defense is extremely good, and I think that matches up well against the Patriots. And you know, the other thing is just with the Brady injury, with it being more than a touchdown, today, this morning, I think I've changed my mind. And I'm going to take, this is nutso, but I'm going to take the Jaguars and the points. I'm not sure if they'll win, but I could see this being a relatively close game. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I don't think it's going to be 45-42. I'm on the under today. So I'm going to take the Jags and the points.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm right there. I don't, after what we saw last week with the Jaguars manhandling Pittsburgh pretty easily there, I don't see this as more than a touchdown game, even though it is Tom Brady and he's had one of his best seasons ever this season and I guess last season as well. I just don't see the Patriots finding a way to beat that Jaguars defense by more than 7 points. I'm going to take the Jaguars here.
Well, I'm going to take the Patriots because all year long, it's like the NFC Championship weekend was set up for me because I've been riding the Patriots and Vikings all year mm-hmm. against the spread. Although the Eagles are very good against the spread too. I think a similar record to the Vikings. But and all your concern is legitimate, and I wouldn't have done it if I didn't get pretty good sense that I think, you know, Brady's injury was just a cut. And I think they'll ice it up or do whatever it has to do. And I think Tom Brady will be fine. It'll be interesting to see if he's actually wearing the glove. I'm guessing he won't even be wearing a glove because he says he doesn't like to wear a glove. He's not Teddy Two Gloves. So I'm still taking the Patriots. And then the main reason why is Blake Bortles, while he made some plays last week, as I watched that game last week, I'm watching Jacksonville was a mystery to me last week. They're supposed to be a great defense, and they just kept giving up touchdowns. And they're supposed to be a horrible offense, and they just kept scoring touchdowns. And I'm watching this going, what is going on? I get the Steelers. Their defense isn't as good as people think. And they have I said earlier that I think Adam Thielen, there's not a receiver in the game I would trade Adam Thielen for. No, I would trade him for Antonio Brown. That guy is head and shoulders above everybody else. So I get that. But I'll take the Patriots -7.5. That extra half point kicker is big, but I think I just think Blake Bortles will be awful. I think the Patriots can at least neutralize the running game, and I think the Jacksonville will score 10 points at most, and Brady will put up to at least 20. So I'm going to take the Patriots.
It's going to come down to 4.5. It's going to be a lot of the running game. I mean, Bortles aside, they're not going to try to have Blake Bortles win this game in Foxboro. This is if Fournette has a decent day, I think if he has more than 85 yards, the Jaguars will be right in this.
That's exactly what they're going to do. Now we're up to Vikings at Eagles, Vikings -3. I think it opened up at maybe as much as 4.5. A lot of money came in on the Eagles. I think 3 is about where it should be. Jonathan, you're up.
You're asking me to say that the Eagles and Nick Foles are going to move on the Vikings defense when for the first half of last game, and for actually much of the game last week, the Saints struggled to do it. They only scored when they had short field position, pretty much. I don't think, and the Eagles, they struggled last week against the Falcons, only scoring 15 total points against the Falcons defense. I don't see the Eagles keeping this close. I think the Vikings win here by more than 3.
And I'm going to take the Vikings -3, and the only concern I have is I really think I agree with you. I mean, you look at the Vikings defense this year, and yeah, they didn't place, you know, they didn't face Aaron Rodgers, but for, you know, half of a quarter, but they faced some pretty good quarterbacks. And the only two quarterbacks that have really at times put the Vikings defense on its heels was the first, maybe 2.5 quarters against Kirk Cousins in Washington.
Yep.
And the last quarter and a half against Drew Brees Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, that's been it. And no other quarterbacks have really shredded this defense for any stretch of time at all. Nick Foles ain't going to do it. The Vikings defense will be fine. They're not going to give up a lot of points. And it comes down to, can the Vikings avoid turnovers? If the Vikings commit 0 turnovers, they will win. And last week, you know, the Vikings got in trouble because they committed a key turnover on that horrible Case Keenum interception. And then the block punt, which was essentially like a turnover. Yeah, and so to me, if the Vikings don't make blunders, they win. The Eagles' defense is going to have to win the game for the Eagles. And they could do that. They're good enough to do that, but I don't think they will. I'll take the Vikings, and I'll take the 3, and I'll give the 3. Tom?
Theoretically, hypothetically, I could imagine someone having 4 figures on the Vikings -3 today. So I'm going to go with the Vikings. Here's what it comes down to for me is, if the Eagles were to win, I think they would have to have a big play in special teams, like you just mentioned with the block punt last week. They would have to have an interception return for a touchdown. Those are always hard points to get back. But beyond that, what I think Philadelphia is going to try to do is they're going to try to run the ball, and I think they're going to run a ton of screens. I think you're going to see a lot of underneath stuff. Number one, trying to neutralize the pass rush of Griffin, et cetera, but also understanding that the Vikings want to keep everything in front of them. They want to be aggressive over top, so I think there's going to be a lot of screen play by Philadelphia. The other factor is the Vikings on third down are the best in the league, and if Philadelphia has third and ones, third and twos, and starts converting third downs, that's going to be sort of a key factor in the game as well, because that's like one of my favorite stats is if you look at third down efficiency, extending drives, moving field position makes such a huge difference. That aside, everything else I see the Vikings having in their favor. With Alshon Jeffery against Xavier Rhodes, you might as well just forget about him. He's done for the day. Offensively, Keenum didn't have a great game last week.
No.
He had two absolutely hideous balls, but he threw one great one at the end.
Yep.
He needs to play better today, and he needs to not make mistakes. Well, I don't think the Vikings are going to have an incredible rushing day. I don't think that's how they're going to get it done. But the key player today for me is Thielen. Thielen over the middle. If the Vikings are able to get him the ball in space over the middle, hit a seam, I like the Vikings today to go to the Super Bowl, which is a crazy thing. The last couple times these have been options, I watched them lose to Atlanta when I was in Havana, Cuba. I watched them lose in Cambodia when to the Saints. So this would be a special thing to come back in a couple weeks to Minneapolis to watch the Vikings in the Super Bowl.
Yes, absolutely. What's your big take?
So my big take is just the zeitgeist of right now for Minnesota, that even on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever, the emotional connection that people have to this team specifically is unlike anything I've ever seen. It's completely different from New Orleans or even 98. Maybe it's with media, maybe it's something. I have friends last night that were partying in Baltimore, locking down, karaoke things. It's just a party, and extending that for two more weeks to have it be in Minneapolis, this has been so fun. Like, this has been so incredibly fun. I can't even remember a season like this before. I will be at the Super Bowl in a couple weeks, and, man, I really want to watch the Vikings.
All right, Tom, we'll talk to you next Sunday.
All right.
Either way, thanks.
I'll be in studio.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, come on in. Fantastic. We'll talk to Tom Lindemann next Sunday live in studio, hopefully talking about a Vikings victory. We'll take a break. And we will take a brief respite from talking Vikings. Gophers basketball, Amir Coffey returned yesterday, and they still stunk.
The Super Bowl experience driven by Genesis is coming to the Minneapolis Convention Center January 27th through February 3rd and features youth football clinics, the NFL shop presented by Visa, player autographs, ring display, and more. Want tickets? Head to the 1500 ESPN stream player now for details on how to win.
You know, we're breaking down all the Vikings NFC championship losses. We've covered two of them. We covered one of them. The first one that they lost was after the 1977 season. The next one was 10 years later after the 1987 season when the Vikings went on that incredible playoff run. I believe it was a strike-shortened year, so the Vikings were actually better than their seed because they lost all three games with the replacement players. So they were really much better than their 8-7 record. And then they went in and they won, beat a very good New Orleans team with Bobby Hebert was their quarterback down in New Orleans. And Mora was their coach, Jim Mora, I believe. Every time I've been saying this stuff today, though, I've been wrong. But that was my memory. And they went down and routed New Orleans. And then they went into Candlestick and beat, I think Joe Montana was still there with the great 49ers and beat them. And then they went into Washington and everyone thought, well, this is going to be the easiest of the three games. They were losing 17-10. And of course, they threw a pass down at the goal line that Darren Nelson dropped on fourth and goal. That play, however, which I watched again yesterday, and I remembered it well. I took my glasses and threw them on the floor and forgot that I had tile right next to my couch and shattered my glasses when that game ended. But what I remember is that, you know, if you look at Darren Nelson, even if he catches the ball, it wasn't that easy of a catch, kind of a diving attempt. I'm not sure that he would have gotten in.
No, he still has to get across the goal line.
It was fourth and goal. Yep. So, you know, that was a disappointing loss. And then the next one we'll cover real quick, the donut. After the 2000 season, they lost 41 donut. And the Vikings were favored in that game. At the Giants. That Giants team wasn't very good. And Kerry Collins was the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
The Vikings kicked off. Kerry Collins threw like two passes at Waswasaranga and they'd scored. The Vikings got the ball. They either fumbled on the kick return or they fumbled real early in the possession. And like Kerry Collins threw another pass. Kerry Collins threw like three passes and they're up 14-0 and we're 2.5 minutes into the game. It didn't get any better after that either.
No.
So that's one that people forget about.
I remember watching that game. We were at one of my mom's work friend or whatever. We were at their house and they had a projector set up in their garage. And I just remember watching that game on that and just seeing, like, not fully understanding, because I think I was like 10 at the time. But just seeing all these adults just like drink their beers, crush them, and then just throw them just angrily throughout the game.
Yeah, it was. That's not one that's ever really thrown out there as a torture because it was over early.
Yeah,
it was like it was more like a firing squad than some sort of a torture chamber.
Yes.
Was that game? You were killed pretty early in that game. And then they just kind of gave up. It was kind of a pathetic effort after that, because the Vikings had a great offense with Dante Culpepper, and they still had Moss, and they yep. had and that was a great offense, and they just fell apart after that. Which is, you know, down 14-0, you're thinking, well, you can come back.
Especially with Randy Moss on your team. Oh, yeah.
That team gained like 180 yards. It's almost impossible to believe they did. And then the Giants went in and got beat pretty handily by the Ravens.
One of the best defenses ever.
Yeah, that's so, right. With then they lost to the quarterback, Trent Dilfer.
Yep.
So those are the two. So we'll cover some of the more heart-wrenching ones coming up on the next couple breaks. Gophers basketball, they're now 3-6 in the Big Ten. They're 1-5 since losing Reggie Lynch. And the thing that's disappointing to me is that they're 1-2 of those games, I think maybe 3 of those games, they were missing Amir Coffey as well. Which is, if you're missing Amir Coffey and Reggie Lynch, you know, I get, but they lost a home game right after the Reggie Lynch suspension. Mm-hmm. They lost a home game to Indiana, which is terrible. And they had Amir Coffey, and that's the game he got hurt. And maybe it impacted him late in that game, but he played. Then they went and they just got drubbed at Northwestern, which was awful because Northwestern's not very good. Then they got drubbed at home to Purdue, which was the least awful of all of them, because Purdue is really good right now. Purdue is one of the best teams in the country right now. And then they went in and they beat Penn State, and that was a nice win. And then they go and they played Maryland, and they lost pretty handily to Maryland. And then they go in and they're playing Ohio State, which is surprising everybody. They're 8-0. And they have some good players. But they held Ohio State to 68 points. They played really good defense. They got killed on the boards a little bit. But they had Amir Coffey back. And to be as bad offensively as they are, there's really no excuse for it. I mean, especially if Amir Coffey is playing. Because you've got Mason, who's a really good player, first team All-Big Ten last year. You have Murphy, who I think was second or third team All-Big Ten last year, and will be close to first or second All-Big Ten team this year. Amir Coffey, even though injured, played pretty well yesterday. And you got Dupree McBrayer. You've got four experienced good players, and then you've just got to add a fifth guy, and they got Amir Harris, who at least can hit a shot occasionally. And, you know, I get when you got to play Bakari Konate or Gaston Jeju, two guys that should have never been recruited, and it is on Richard Pitino that his first couple recruiting years, he got very little done. You know, when you have Bakari Konate and Gaston Jeju are seniors, I mean, two guys that are not even close to being Big Ten players. Michael Hurts really has not proven to be close to a Big Ten player. And Jelly, even though a four-star recruit, has proven to not be a very effective player yet. You know, and he hasn't. So really, I think you can get on this team a little bit. They should be better than this. You know, are they going to be good enough to make the tournament? No. But there's really no excuse for them offensively to be this bad. I don't know if Mason's hurt. Mason, you know, and they're 1-5 since they lost those guys. And Mason's really only had one or two good games. Murphy's had only one or two good games, and I get that the defense can concentrate on them more because there's nobody else there, but they should be better than this. And you know, that's kind of my take, that Richard Pitino, they played really well against Penn State, and then the next two games were bad. And I know Richard Pitino's complaining because they're on the road for a whole week, and I get that. Anybody that says college athletics is about the student-athletes, just look at the schedule the Gophers had, right? They played on the road on, what was it, Monday, on the road Wednesday or Thursday. And then they had to go to New York to play what was a quote-unquote home game, so the Big Ten can market in New York, and there's 4,600 fans there, where if they'd been in the barn, there would have been 14,000. If it had been in Ohio State, there would have been 15,000. This chasing after the New York market after markets, which has ruined Gopher hockey, is not helping on this one. If you want to stagger the game times and all that, but making Minnesota and Ohio State go play a Gopher home game in Madison Square Garden, that's a joke. But I don't like the excuses being made. The Gophers should be better than this. When we come back, we'll talk about the Wolves, who are playing fantastic.